Today I'm switching the subject from patriotism to U.S. Christianity and the religious scene in this country. This will be a little different in character from the last couple of sessions in that I can't really tell a story here, much as we've done the last two sessions, since I'll be working with concepts from Bonhoeffer's thought. I can't present this in narrative fashion, which I find more gripping and actually effective way of teaching, because the character of the materials themselves require that we work with concepts rather than narrative, rather than stories. Now, that's going to mean a little more head work on your part without a plot line to follow, and I ask for your attention to a rather important but not easy task of thinking with me through Bonhoeffer's writings on the subject of religion. To aid in that process, I put some things on, we can't call it blackboard, the whiteboard here behind us, and we'll then take about half of the period to work through some concepts, and then we'll take the last half of the hour to see what your response is. The questions to focus the response are questions, first of all, questions about whether you think Bonhoeffer's criticism of religion as he found it is accurate, and then the following questions from there: what is your response to that, if it is or if it is not? First of all, then, we've got to get at what Bonhoeffer means by religion. And there are two things that you need to know at the outset as a kind of, one is a matter of background or backdrop, and the other is a kind of warning. The warning has two parts. For Bonhoeffer, despite the fact that he's a Lutheran theologian, religion is a word that has almost totally negative connotations. That may seem a little curious to you, but Bonhoeffer did not think much of religion as a positive force in people's lives. And in fact, the most enigmatic phrases that we have from the last letters of Bonhoeffer, the theological letters to his friend Eberhard Betke, the most enigmatic phrases there are phrases like, "I'm striving for a non-religious interpretation of biblical concepts," or phrases like, "What we need to think about is religionless Christianity for a world come of age." So he does not think much of religion. You just need to know that. The second part of this initial sort of warning is that Bonhoeffer may well mean something by religion that you don't. And I'm just pleading with you to do your best to make your minds a kind of tabula rasa here. Let him define religion for a while without you understanding already what it is that he ought to be saying. Let him say it and then decide if he ought to have said that or not. So just let the word's meaning be filled in by Bonhoeffer. If you don't, let him supply the meaning, and if you insist upon pressing your associations upon him, then you won't understand what he's looking for when he looks for an alternative to religion. And those enigmatic phrases about religionless Christianity, non-religious interpretations of biblical concepts, just won't make any sense at all. Okay, that's the warning. Now, the backdrop. As I mentioned in the both previous sessions, Bonhoeffer was the inheritor and almost a kind of guardian of the great humanist learning of 19th century Germany, when Germany was the teacher of the world. part of that flowering of intellectual culture in the 19th century and well into the early part of the 20th century was profound insight into and judgment about human beings as religious creatures. But the insights that came there did not come, first of all, from the theologians, as much from pathfinders in other arenas, some of them new, some of them old, and especially creative minds working in both ancient and modern studies. I'm thinking of Nietzsche and Feuerbach in philosophy. I'm thinking of Freud in one of the new areas, psychotherapy, and of Karl Marx, who, though he was working in political economy, nonetheless launched a new perspective of what it is that drives human history and what it is that shapes human values, including moral and religious perspectives. So when I named this session North American Religion, the critics were right. I did not have in mind only Dietrich Bonhoeffer as among the critics, but the critics that Bonhoeffer himself read and heard about and from as from the 19th and early 20th century. And so his understanding of religion is one which draws upon that legacy. Now that's the backdrop. One last introductory comment and then we'll be off and running. There is another enigmatic phrase in the theological letters of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and it is the phrase, world come of age. We'll get to it later. I only draw your attention at this moment to the fact that when I exegete Bonhoeffer on the subject of religion, the meanings there will correlate with meanings given to this other phrase, world come of age. They are contrasting phrases, and the content of one will have its corollary in the content of the other. We'll do that as we go, but it's helpful to know that at the outset. All right, let's jump in here, and let's see, we've got till about a quarter of 12, so next 25 minutes given to the meaning of religion. You may recall, if you were at the previous meetings, that Bonhoeffer made that fateful trip in 1939 to the United States, wondering whether he should escape Germany and take up the life of a refugee, and then decided after 6 weeks that he had to return home despite the dangers. Well, during that short stay at Union Seminary, he walked across the street to attend worship at Riverside Church. And Bonhoeffer, whenever he traveled, he kept a diary. He didn't at other times, but he did when he traveled. And his diary entry for the 18th of June, 1939, goes as follows. Worship service in Riverside Church, simply unbearable. The whole thing is a pompous, self-satisfying celebration of religion. Don't the people know that we'd really do better without such religion? Perhaps the Anglo-Saxons really are more religious than we, but they certainly aren't more Christian, if they tolerate such a sermon as that was. I haven't taken opportunity yet to go back through the records to see who preached that sermon. It might have been some unknown, like Harry Emerson Fosdick, who was a preacher at the time, but you don't know with summer schedules because they're there sometimes and not there sometimes. Anyway, it would be fun just to go back and find out who it is. Wonderful goes on. I have no doubt that a storm will blow mightily through this religious handout someday, if God is anywhere at all on the scene. The tasks for a genuine theologian here are innumerable. But this junk can only be sorted by an American theologian, and to this point, none appear to be around.
This is a bad
movie. This was a bad sermon that day, evidently. Well, what is this kind of self-satisfying, rather bourgeois religion that Bonhoeffer could barely stomach and that he thinks we would be better off without? Now I'm going to necessarily turn to other writings from Bonhoeffer, most of which come a little bit later. There is some from that America trip. He did an essay upon his return entitled Protestantism Without Reformation. That's what he thought he found in the United States. This is a very interesting thing. It actually is quite intriguing because it in essence says American religion has no sense of the cross. There isn't any sense of tragedy and suffering in our religious life. It is very superficial, and it is kind of officially optimistic without much sense for the tragic dimensions of human existence. So it's kind of a theology of glory, yeah, rather than a theology of the cross. Yeah. Well, anyway, other things. But to understand those comments about Riverside Church and later in Bonhoeffer's reflections back on a decade when he had more time than he wanted on his hands in the Tegel prison, we have to understand something about the nature of consciousness. And I just digress here to elicit some help from really the sociologists, because to understand Bonhoeffer on religious, you have to understand the character of human consciousness. Not conscience now, but consciousness, by which I simply mean our sense of reality or the picture of reality that we carry around in our heads, because it is our consciousness that that sets our angle of vision on things and so determines the way we see life, the way we feel and think about it, how we live it out. It does the selecting and sorting and interpreting of our experience. And we have to hear Bonhoeffer now understand several notes about our human consciousness. One is that the content of our consciousness can change. People's pictures of what the world is about varies widely from place to place, time to time, and in a time of great change, people's consciousness as individuals may well evolve and change within the course of their own lifetime. But certainly in any society, one group will see the same set of events differently, interpret them differently, feel about them differently, respond to them differently than another group. Because of their consciousness. But sometimes in the human story, a whole, the collective consciousness, the shared consciousness of a whole society will change, and that's a turning of the ages. So we talk about the Renaissance, or we talk about the Reformation, or we talk about modernity. That's a way of giving a name tag for a massively shared consciousness. So those actually were the first two notes. We respond to life in terms of our consciousness, and sometimes it changes in a massive way. The third item is that consciousness is a basic shaper and interpreter of our human needs. There are some stringent physiological determinants of our needs. We all have what are called needs of first necessity, survival needs, food, clothing, shelter, etc. We've got some genetic stipulations, but beyond these physiological determinants and beyond these absolutely basic needs, survival needs, it is our consciousness that really tells us what we think our needs are. All right. Now, the reason this is so important for understanding Bonhoeffer is that he contends that his term now, religion, belongs to a long-standing, now changing, and for many, a passing consciousness. It's a way of looking at life, thinking about it, responding to it, that is on its way out for many, many people in our time. And he sees what he calls world come of age consciousness as a way of responding, thinking about life as an ascending consciousness. Many people in his own circles are moving from a religious consciousness to a world come of age consciousness, and they are fundamentally different ways of experiencing life, thinking about our experience of life, and living it out. All right, the implications of that are startling for Bonhoeffer, and I think you will find them startling. Let's just start with one of them. He rejects a religious a priori, that's his term, supposedly constitutional to human nature. He is saying that we are not, as human beings, by nature religious creatures, in his term of religion. Let him define it now. He means by that, there isn't any inborn God-shaped blank that must be fulfilled if a person, or in order for a person to live a life of meaning or purpose and integrity. More accurately stated, if some religious needs exist for us that only God, or at least religion, can meet, those needs are relative to our consciousness. They are not there as a almost eternal characteristic of human beings. They are relative to the community and the person's consciousness. So that a need for God and a need for religion is not a given of human nature, Bonhoeffer is saying. Human beings as human beings are not homo religiosus, if you will. Although some men and women are, depending on their sense of reality. That's the point about consciousness. Bonhoeffer is not saying that there aren't lots of folks who don't have a felt need for God and religion. He's saying that such needs are the needs of people possessed of a particular consciousness, one with a very long history, but one in our day, which for many people is passing. And he is saying that the consciousness of a lot of other folks that he knows is such that it's already altered in a way that they can get along very well without God and without religion, that they fare better in many cases than religious people. And those are world come of age people. It means that their way of seeing life is such that God and religion are not indispensable to a satisfactory vision of life, to a humane morality, and to lives of meaning and purpose and integrity. Okay, that's one of the kind of startling implications for Bonhoeffer as he thinks about these things. Another one is his observation that Western Christianity, in all aspects, liturgy, doctrine, ethics, has cast its content in the form and the material of religion. That is, that Christianity in the West rests on religious foundations. And the implication here is that if ours is in fact becoming a religionless time, then, I'm quoting Bonhoeffer now, the foundation is taken away from the whole of what has up to now been our, and he puts in quotation marks the word Christianity. So there's something enormously important for Christianity. Christians in the West have been and are people of religious consciousness who find themselves in a world in which that consciousness is in the process of a slow expiration. So he asks, what would religionless Christianity be in a world come of age? Becomes his question. Or another way he puts it, how do we claim Christ in a world come of age if we have cast all of the meanings that we have about Christ in religion, religious terms? All right, what is it that about religious consciousness? What is that in terms of how we understand ourselves, the world, and God? It may be helpful to try to interject a little bit of the story line here, the biography, because you cannot read one word of Dietrich Bonhoeffer's stuff without noting that it's autobiographical. More than most writers, he is reflecting the immediate experience of the time, even when it cannot be written about in those very words, because it would be too dangerous to do so. But in this case, world come of age consciousness is not an abstract concept for Bonhoeffer. It is his experience of his family and his colleagues in the resistance movement. His father, the psychiatrist, his eldest brother, Carl Friedrich, the physicist, his other brother, Klaus, the lawyer, were all people who were people of moral integrity, a very strong sense of civic responsibility, but who were, for all practical purposes, not religious folks. And they were, in our terms, about as good a secular humanist as God ever created. And Bonhoeffer was influenced by them. Likewise, the people in the resistance, some of them high military officials with a kind of Prussian sense of civic responsibility, some of them very sincere and compassionate socialists, were also people of world come of age consciousness who didn't exhibit any of the religious consciousness that he saw much of in the church. So I just say that to let you know that this is not Bonhoeffer sort of thinking in wild imagination, but rather an effort to make sense of the experience which is closest to him, and to do so as a theologian. All right. For the person of religious consciousness, God, says Bonhoeffer, is a working hypothesis. A working hypothesis to help explain whatever is unexplainable or whatever seems to be inexplicable. And contrasting with this, in the view of people of world come of age consciousness, you have the growth of human autonomy through the increase of human knowledge and the increase of human powers, that so that we can, like Dietrich saw his scientist brother doing, explain more and more of the natural processes and social processes in ways that do not require what Bonhoeffer calls the tutelage of a divinity. We can explain more of life from premises which do not need and which do not posit God as necessary for the explanation. It used to be that God or the gods were employed to account for almost everything that happened, and now other explanations suffice. At least they suffice as well as do religious ones. This is not an arrogant notion here that they explain and there is no mystery left. But it is rather that God, for world come of age consciousness, is not necessary to those understandings which enable us to come to terms with our world and the obligations we have here. It's assembled without God's necessary participation in knowing our world. But for world come of age, or for people of religious consciousness, God is a working hypothesis for explaining what is unexplainable. God, then, Bonhoeffer says, always becomes associated with, or always becomes situated in, the unknown rather than the known. You hear that? God becomes associated with that which we do not yet understand. And as human knowledge expands and we understand in terms that don't deposit God, we keep pushing God farther and farther, Bonhoeffer says, to the perimeter, to the periphery of life. And God becomes pressed ever outward toward the boundaries, boundaries themselves, which are pushed back as human knowledge and human powers increase. What happens to religion then? And Bonhoeffer thinks about what's happening in the United States and in Germany. It becomes a separated sector of life. There's politics, and politics is politics, and economics is economics, and religion is religion. That sector left for that which we don't have sufficient explanation or sufficient human power to deal with otherwise. Religion and God then become genuinely alienated and separated from the rest of people's life. It becomes a sector rather than the crucial dimension in the midst of the whole. Bonhoeffer also says, secondly, that the God of religion, religious consciousness, is a deus ex machina. This is a phrase which some of you will know from classics. In the Greek and Roman plays, whenever the normal course of events in those plays simply could not muster some action essential to the plot, human beings worked themselves into a hopeless situation. They just couldn't get out of this. Whenever that play arrived at that point, then a god or a goddess intervened and did his or her job, and then the business of life and the play could move on to the next disaster that we managed to get into. And Bonhoeffer is contending, in effect, that people of religious consciousness turn to God and to religion only, but always, when their human resources fail to accomplish what they want or what they need done. We turn to God to secure solutions, in quotation marks, to problems that exhaust us, or that we regard or choose to regard as insoluble or interminable or beyond our control now. The intervening God is called upon at the point of the exhaustion of human powers, or at the point when we just can't see where we can go from here. Or when we're just simply too tired to struggle with that particular matter anymore. Then we call upon God and we turn to religion. Now that's a contrast with what Bonhoeffer saw in his family and in the resistance movement. With world come of age people, through the there is a sense of moral accountability and a sense of responsibility for human powers. That means that the humanity's destiny, our fate, falls into human hands in ever greater measure these days. If we have time during our discussion, I'll do a digression on what Bonhoeffer sees as the shift in human power in this century and what that means for our understanding of God. But at this point, world come of age people are people who regard themselves as irrevocably accountable for their answers to life's questions, together with the consequences of the answers that they act upon. Where there is failure, as failure there will, excuse me, as failure there will certainly be, there isn't recourse taken to God and to religion to bail them out at that point, or to deposit, the buck doesn't stop with God or circumstances or fate or our situation. It isn't placed there. They accept it as their own. So a religious or a quasi-religious account isn't set up from which one withdraws the deposit when you run out of your own resources. Rather, they have a very strong sense of moral accountability and demonstrate a kind of psychological strength. All right, you can argue with Bonhoeffer, but that's what he's getting at. Another way of saying this very thing, well, it's a little bit different way. Instead of Deus ex machina, the intervening God, when human powers peter, the situation is beyond our control, one could also talk about this, and I should have put it up there, a dependency notion of God, where we see ourselves as a child is related to a parent. Bonhoeffer talks about world come of age. That's a phrase from the Enlightenment. It actually comes from the philosopher Kant. It means in common German that point in a person's life when you take upon yourself the responsibilities of adulthood. You come of age. We call 18 or 21 or whatever we designate it by law. It's the movement from being responsible for your own actions, and rather than your parents still holding responsibility for you. So when Bonhoeffer speaks about the adulthood of the world, he doesn't mean now, or world come of age, that human beings have achieved a degree of moral ripeness that's never before been attained. He means that humanity is responsible for the use of its increased knowledge, its increased human powers, whether they're expressed in a morally mature, and whether they're used properly or not. And he means that world come of age people accept that responsibility. There is no returning to an adolescent dependence upon a father, even a heavenly father, on whom final responsibility falls. For world come of age people, humanity's future or lack of future rests in human hands. How we use that bomb, how we use biotechnology, how we affect the environment, etc. But for people of religious consciousness, there is a stifling of that kind of responsibility and the facing of those enormous moral and theological questions about the use of human power, because there's a kind of adolescent dependence upon a heavenly father who will bail us out. God won't let us drop that bomb, or God wouldn't let the creation be injured by us, would be that kind of response. But more than that, let's go jump back up to Deus ex machina, and then I must finish quickly so we have some time to talk. More than that, when God is the God out of the box, out of the machine, the consequences for religion go something like this. God is not experienced by people in their strength and in their achievements. God is experienced by people in their trouble and in their weakness. That's when we turn to God. When we are exercising our own inherent creative powers and working with those, we don't even think about God. Rather, we turn to God only when we are tired, exhausted, self-denigrating, or in trouble. And that's usually when we're most preoccupied with ourselves and with our problems. That's when we turn to God and religion. The rest of the time, when we're kind of self-confident and responsible and strong, we do all that without God. Now, this is Freud's contention, that for people of religious consciousness, we are, as human beings, less when we are most with God and more when we are most Godless. One last item here. For Bonhoeffer, religious consciousness is played out between two poles. At one pole is this God who is located beyond the world rather than in the midst of it, located in getting pushed farther and farther back into the regions of the unexplainable and the unknown. That's the God that rests at one pole. The other pole of religious consciousness is an interior realm within the individual. The heart of religion is the life of interiority and what goes on inside me and between me and the God who is beyond the world. That's why Bonhoeffer says individual inwardness is the place where we meet God in religious consciousness. God is removed from the world except for the speaking place in the recesses of the soul. Religion is removed from critical engagement in our public life, in various communities. Religion again becomes a separated thing. Now it's located in some inner sanctuary to which we withdraw from the world in order to encounter God and to take solace there. That's why Bonhoeffer jotted in the outline for a new book. He got all excited in prison about some of these notions, and he sketched out the outline for a new book. He actually worked on it, got 100 pages of it done, and then the Gestapo found out about his involvement in the resistance and began the long process of moving from to the Gestapo prison and then to Buchenwald, and where he was there at the same time as Elie Wiesel, incidentally, and then on to Flossenbürg. Dietrich left behind everything for his parents to pick up. His clothes, they were permitted to visit. His clothes, his books, everything except 100 pages on the new book. He was so excited about that he took that along. So we don't know what he had to say about those things. But among the things were left behind was an outline for it. And in that outline, maybe now you will understand this one line better than at the beginning when I asked you to let Bonhoeffer define religion. Think of individual inwardness, two poles of religious consciousness. He writes in the outline for the new book, pietism as a last attempt to maintain evangelical Christianity as a religion. This is the way of pietism, the self and God, in interiority and the God beyond the troubles of the world. And Bonhoeffer says pietism is the last attempt to maintain Christianity as a religion. Now, finally, I think you'll find these, even though they're 40, 50 years old, some of these comments aren't totally out of date for the religious scene. And you might be interested in Bonhoeffer's commentary here. He's not happy about this because a certain tragedy and a certain irony waits in the wings. He says, the church, regrettably, will fight the world's coming of age and do all in its power to save a safe place for God and religion. And the clergy, he says, will use, quote, all their clerical tricks to retain religion as a sector of life. They will do it by marketing certain questions and problems, like death and guilt, to which supposedly only God can give an adequate answer. The irony is that World Come of Age people are in their godlessness actually closer, Bonhoeffer is convinced, to confronting the God of the Bible than are religious Christians in their alliance with the God of religion. The tragedy is that he thinks the church may well end up being the strongest opponent of the rediscovery of Christianity in a different kind of age. And will, in fact, not come to terms with the character of the modern age. And I'm going to quote from Letters and Papers from Prison now, and then close. The attack by Christian apologetics on the adulthood of the world, I consider to be in the first place pointless, in the second place ignoble, and in the third place unchristian. Pointless because it seems to me like an attempt to put a grown-up person back into adolescence, that is to make them dependent on things which they are in fact no longer dependent, thrust them into problems that are in fact no longer problems to them. Ignoble because it amounts to an attempt to exploit human weaknesses for purposes that are alien to us and to which we have not freely assented. Unchristian because it confuses Christ with one particular stage in human religiousness. Just a small aside. I make it because so many people who have interpreted Bonhoeffer have missed the boat entirely on the matter of religion in Bonhoeffer. Harvey Cox did it in The Secular City. Others who see in Bonhoeffer the theologian of the death of God movement of some of the 50s, which is a crazy and kind of interpretation. They made the mistake that what Bonhoeffer meant by religion referred to things such as worship, sacrament, scripture, sermon, doctrine, prayer, meditation, confession, etc. That all belonged to religion. For Bonhoeffer, all of those things, sacrament, scripture, biblical materials, doctrine, prayer, worship, confession, may be interpreted and may be employed in either religious or non-religious ways. And what he's looking for is a non-religious understanding of biblical notions, and a non-religious way of worshiping, and a non-religious Christianity, and how to claim Christ for a world come of age. So I just say that because a lot of times when people read Bonhoeffer, they make that mistake, that because he has said all of Western Christianity has been soaked in religion and is there up for grabs, he does not mean that there is no place for that. Bonhoeffer himself read scripture daily and made daily meditation and prayer the habit of his life. In fact, his fiance used to get letters from him. She had to always go look at the church calendar and find out when he wrote it, because he dated his mail by the ecclesiastical year rather than the date. That's the rhythm that he lived, but it was non-religious in his interpretation. Okay, he saw those characteristics that I just outlined for you of religion in the United States as well as in Germany when he observed the religious theme. And so I just throw it open to you for two kinds of questions. One, what do you think of that? And then if there are further questions of clarification, what did Bonhoeffer mean by that? Let's tackle those as well. This is a heavy load to throw at you in a short time. Bonhoeffer wrote these things in theological letters to his friend Eberhard Bethge. He hadn't the foggiest notion that anyone else would ever read them. So if he had written these as a book, he'd taken some care. But he and Eberhard were the best of friends. His friend understood the meaning of his vocabulary. But it's difficult for us, and I've exegeted these quickly. So if there are questions of clarification as well as questions, argue with Bonhoeffer a bit. Is he right about our scene? Is that true of religious life? Is that the God that we find? All right, let's go at it. Now, John.
Mayor, what would be a non-religious interpretation of the sacraments and prayer as opposed to a religious?
Stay tuned. The next session. No, that's not fair, then, if you're leaving tomorrow. The session tomorrow, which is in the evening and not before you're leaving, is Bonhoeffer's half-formed look to a way ahead and his struggles to give an answer to your question. And I underline that it's half-formed. I wish I had the 100 pages that he took to the Gestapo prison to help give the answer.
Santorum, be helpful, or is that too early? And not get under the impact of this radical new look at religion. That's an earlier book of Bonhoeffer.
Yeah,
in fact, a student work, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's one of his. It's one of he. As you know, Paul, the Germans have to write two doctoral dissertations, and the one doctoral dissertation was the book, The Communion of Saints, which was one of the very earliest efforts to look at the church from a sociological as well as a theological point of view. And it is appropriate as a response to the question, or at least it plays into that, because Bonhoeffer's contention in the book The Communion of Saints is that Christ exists as community. And one answer is that in contrast to individual inwardness as a place of meeting God, it is in relationality and in life together that one experiences and communicates God, and the church exists, and Christ takes that kind of form. Now, in Letters and Papers, that is picked up and sharpened. And he says in the baptismal sermon to the Batka's newborn, named after Uncle Dietrich, that for a while, our being Christian, is limited to two things: prayer and doing justice. And then he sees a rhythm between prayer, which is a close community, thinking through in a new age now what all of those great words might mean: redemption, salvation, reconciliation. They have lost their meaning for Bonhoeffer as he observes the church, not for him personally. They don't carry power anymore in our age. But there will be a close community. Prayer is a shorthand for this focused, disciplined life of meditation and spirituality. That close community, he picks it up in Letters and Papers with a New Testament term, the community of arcane discipline or hidden discipline. It's not for the streets. We're not talking about glass crystal cathedral religion here. We're not talking about bumper sticker Christianity here.
Or Riverside Church.
Or Riverside Church. We are talking about communities of discipline which work through the legacy of the faith itself relating to the age. Now, it has to be it cannot be off by itself. It cannot be withdrawn, because the public life is the place where one also experiences God. And so it is a rhythm of prayer and doing justice. Doing justice means making common cause for the common good with folks of all persuasion, and there are no theological or ecclesiastical qualifications there. But it isn't that you find the answers in church and apply them in the public arena. No. You work through the faith in church from what one also gathers in the dialectic of arcane discipline and public engagement. And there's some thinking about what is the way through. He also is convinced that for a while the talking about the faith will not carry power publicly. And he says, we wait upon a time of non-religious language, which will carry new power. I personally think in the week after probably the week after next, I want to do some sessions on whether that time has arrived. I think there are some signs that that time's arrived. But it's not arrived in North American and European Christianity. It's arrived elsewhere.
I find close parallels between Bonhoeffer and prophetic faith in the Hebrew Bible. And indeed, Bonhoeffer is one of the few that I think we could ascribe the title prophet to in the modern age, because you find this contrast between the official national cult, such as you find in Israel, and living faith in Yahweh, that radical emphasis on faith as linked to justice and worship as linked to the discernment of God's presence in this world, not necessarily in the vehicles handed down, but now in the events around us. And of course, Bonhoeffer would see that Christologically rather than in terms of faith in Yahweh. But if Yahweh is Emmanuel, I think it's the same thing. You know, he has that lovely passage in letters from prison where he says that I'm not satisfied to locate Christ at the edge of the village, but at its center. It's all Christological, and I think that maybe needs some qualification in the new language of our time, but this emphasis on God's living presence is defining worship rather than our received forms, I think, is very prophetic.
He has a nice little remark in Letters and Papers from Prison. He says, what do we in the church do when we... with the great public figures of our day. We criticize Goethe and Napoleon for their sexual indiscretions. Why don't we call them to accountability for the use of powers? That is, people at their strengths. And what is their responsibility there, rather than finding little things at the edges where we locate our response to them. In the midst of life, and in people's exercise of what they're about, is where
instead of having the last Christians being those human evil knights who still practice
memories. Yes, that's right. I want to push this a little bit toward our scene. I don't want to do a lot more Bonhoeffer now. I want to say, is this an accurate description of lots of religious life in the United States, or is it not?
Just going to say, I'm a geophysicist, scientist. I think I live in both worlds.
So?
And it's, right now, it isn't a very comfortable place for me. And I think that the church and religious people probably do need to somehow come to terms with what the last 80 years of science have done to our view of the entire universe, from macrocosm to microcosm. Until very recently, I used to think that there really wasn't that much of a problem because I had religion and science in entirely separate realms. In my own personal experience, recently, I'm beginning to see that I may not be able to keep that separation, that barrier up anymore, and that somehow I have to find a way to synthesize or reconcile. At this point, I haven't been given the light to do that. And I hope that in time, humanity as a whole will be able to do that, because I think it may be critical.
Yes, no question. There are some exciting things happening in the dialogue between religion and science, but your own story there reflects the fact that we haven't been done very well in appropriating the learning there for the parish life of the church. We haven't attended to science carefully enough and thought through its meaning or the faith, and we haven't expressed the faith in ways. We haven't expressed the faith in ways that take account of that. But there are many things happening, which I find
I've been doing some reading, and it's encouraging, but it's also in some of the reading I've done, it's scary. Because it really seems to threaten some traditional, maybe what Bonhoeffer would call religious parts of the religious worldview.
And Bonhoeffer's own family. Bonhoeffer himself didn't get terribly involved in what we now would talk about as a dialogue between religion and science, but he was, because he lived in a family of scientists, it was part of the ethos of the place. Yeah. And in fact, it was his father and his older brother, their lack of interest in the church was because it had no intellectual credibility, given the fact that they were scientists.
I'm sure that had a profound effect on Bonhoeffer's theology.
It did, and I mentioned yesterday that one of the books which had a profound effect on him was von Weizsäcker's book, The History of Nature, on the physicist.
I see in Bonhoeffer also the idea of that Christ is the end of religion and the beginning of a spirituality where you are in partnership with God, trying to bend history into the direction of the kingdom, for which you don't need to pray for the poor, but you have to go out and help them. It is an action which is desired here, and not just sitting there and praying for the hungry, or taking your checkbook and writing $100 and give it to World Relief. He is very action-minded.
Although it's not a dissolving of the life of meditation into action, those are poles for him. He moves back and forth.
Kind of an active spirituality.
Yeah.
Spirituality that moves.
But the picture of God, which we may have time to get to in Letters and Papers from Prison, he goes deep into his influence of Luther on the suffering God, focused now in the man, the person, Jesus. Mm-hmm. And there is this reversal of the relationship of God and self that we've inherited. What Bonhoeffer sees as coming from his own tradition, which he also saw reflected in the United States, was a picture of an all-powerful and overwhelming God, on the one point, who is strong while humanity is weak and must, in good Calvinist fashion, be humbled before an almighty and judging and powerful God. Bonhoeffer almost reverses that and says that God now becomes weak, he says, lets himself be edged out of the world onto the cross, in order to empower human beings to take more responsibility for their own lot. And so you have God entering into human suffering for the purposes of empowerment of people to take responsibility for their own conditions of things. And this is Luther's suffering God, but it is no longer the God who is all-powerful and in control. It is the God who fosters human power and a sense of human accountability for the uses of its increased human powers. Yeah.
Is this something like liberation theology in a sense? I mean, we have the freedom to have control of our own relationship with each other and our communion with God, as opposed to these norms or whatever that was established previously that kind of kept the status quo and kept us coming to God only as a last resort or when things get bad.
I'm very glad you raised that question, although people keep asking about Bonhoeffer, and I want to talk about the United States. I neglected to put up here one item that should have gone up here, and that is that religion for Bonhoeffer is associated with the preservation of the status quo. People of religious conscience. It works, and that's part of the critique that comes from Marx. It works in such a way that it draws off our attending to changing the conditions that cause the suffering which take us to God. Karl Marx says, religion is the sigh of the oppressed creature, the heart of a heartless world, the spirit of a spiritless situation. Those are Marx's words. Then the next phrase is, religion is the opiate of the people. Religion for Marx is appreciated because it is the remaining sign of human life. We aren't totally dehumanized. There is the sigh of the oppressed creature. There is the spirit of a spiritless world. The heart of a heartless situation. All that's good, says Marx. But religion is the opiate of the people. We turn to God and to religion to deal with the suffering that comes from that situation. And that leaves the conditions that produced it unchanged. We don't turn our attention there. And that's why religion is the opiate of the people. Bonhoeffer happens to agree that religion tends to function in that way and does not want to see that happen, and that's part of the doing justice as a dialectic for prayer. Now, when you say, is this liberation theology? Bonhoeffer died before liberation theology and its modern versions took form. So in that sense, it isn't, because it isn't that. There are some elements which are precursors. And Gustavo Gutierrez, who wrote the book The Theology of Liberation as kind of the father of Latin American liberation theology, says in another volume, in a chapter, the last chapter of the book, that Dietrich Bonhoeffer is the only European theologian who understood what our critique of American and European Christianity. But it wasn't because Bonhoeffer was influenced by Marx and had gotten at liberation theology in Nietzsche there yet. It was because of that famous paragraph that the view from below and from the experience of the oppressed and the victims and the maltreated tells more truth about the realities of dynamics, social dynamics in our world, than does personal good fortune. And Bonhoeffer saw the world from below by being cast as among the ranks of the victims themselves. So there are some precursors, and this has some overtones, but it's not liberation theology.